Welcome to Travelog, the podcast of Condé Nast Traveler. I'm Laura Redman, summing in for Brad Brickman, and we are here at Condé headquarters at One World Trade Center in New York City. And we have a kind of trifecta of supermoms, or MILFs, here today. We've got Editor-in-Chief Pilar Guzman, Features Director Alex Postman, and Deputy Editor Lauren DiCarlo. And we're here to talk about something that's very close to our hearts, very personal. It's what we do when we are not here, and it's traveling with our families. We just put up a monster package online called 18 Summers, the ultimate guide to not wasting a single vacation with your kids. That was all you, DiCarlo. That's a nice head. But it is the kind of package that we hope you return to over and over again. It has the kind of trip we hope you consider taking with your kid every year. There's 18 summers with them from birth to when you drop them off and they kind of give you a nonchalant wave in their dorm room. And, you know, you don't want to waste a minute, really. But PG, this came from you. What was the origin?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think this idea of, you know, it goes by in a blink. Those early days when you have an infant and you're up in all hours of the night, it's hard to imagine even putting them into a car seat, let alone an airplane seat, and traveling across continents and bodies of water. Mm. And so, you know, this was one of these things where we wanted to take stock, and we were all at different stages of our parenting life cycles. Mm-hmm. And two of us have older kids and two of us have younger kids. And I think it's unimaginable during some of those early days that you would actually strap a baby on your back and, you know, yeah, climb Machu Picchu or even just take a flight, period. So that was sort of, you know, the beginning and just the poignancy of this notion that you only have 18 summers. And if your kid is nine of them are over, you know, you're 50% through. And that's hard to imagine because they still feel like a little kid. So we really started there, and we really wanted to make this both incredibly inspiring but also incredibly tactical. It's that there, you know, we want to give permission to those parents who want to take a baby step, no pun intended, on their first, second, or third trip with their child, and then also give people permission and the tools with which to reach. And I think that's maybe even the more important part, because we all take the baby steps and we all really want to reach. Anybody who is listening to this podcast or engages with any of our platforms is somebody who wants to push themselves a little further. Yeah. And especially with children. And you mm-hmm. will find as time goes on that it gets easier and easier, and then you get to reach a little bit higher, harder. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of where we started. So, yeah. Laura, you're coming off of, you have a one,
she's got
two.
Oh my God, almost two? 15 months.
Sorry.
And no, she, you know, she acts like she's two. I want to go to the doctor and be like, can I have a three-nager at 13 months, 14 months? She's attitude. She has opinions already. But no, we've been really lucky. We've traveled with her a lot. You mentioned strapping your baby to your back, going to Machu Picchu. That's what Sophia did. We have this beautiful photo of one of our contributors, Chufi, who literally took her six-month-old on a hike up the Incan Trail. And I'm sitting here like, I went to Paris. And I'm pretty proud of going to Paris.
But at least you went to Paris.
Yeah.
I mean, as the mother of a two-year-old, I have severe anxiety about traveling with Charlie. And
what is it? Like, is there one thing?
It's a lot of things. I think it's like the acknowledgement that you're not traveling in the same way that you used to travel, which is, it's sort of sad a little bit.
Mm.
I get anxiety thinking about being in a place and feeling like, I don't know how to have this trip. I don't know how to have the trip that I used to have. And
you won't have the trip.
Yeah,
that you used to have.
I know, so I know. But I'm okay with that. But I think like the great thing about what we pulled together in this package, I think, is showing that it's okay for the first couple of years to rent a house and go to a place and invite your in-laws and your siblings to come, because you need help.
The
and
support
you,
system.
Yeah, and you just, honestly, like, all I want to do is sleep in and have some drinks and not wake up at 5 or 6 in the morning. And the anxiety of going to a place where I can't have somebody take him for the morning.
Right.
You know, which is why it's so nice. In those early trips, we said, it's okay. Like, go to a house, invite some people, have the support, because you're going to need it. You're still away, but you're just traveling with support.
I do think it's an important point that you make, that a vacation at this stage of babyhood, of you know, parenthood, is in fact being able to have a couple of drinks and not be under house arrest in
yes.
a hotel where you have
yes.
to turn off the light and
right.
be quiet, or, you know, maybe if there's, you're lucky to have a veranda that you can go out on,
yeah.
you know.
Or worrying about your kids jumping on the floor
Yes, and making noise. That's the other anxiety, yes. Is that the walls are thin.
Well, even right. just yeah. having the lights off in the hotel room, you know, the baby goes to sleep at like 7:30, and it's like lights off, and you're a hostage in your hotel room.
Totally. That's
the so fun you're thing. In the bathroom, I mean, having a glass of wine because.
Have you done that?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, because we, like, where do you go? But Lori, that was one of the best things about your trip to Paris when you brought your baby monitor, and it worked in the restaurant downstairs, so you can actually keep the baby upstairs and go downstairs.
Yeah,
and still...
I caught some shit for that too, but that's another.
Why?
I'll tell
I
you in a
that's
second.
Brilliant.
No, but so, I did that too, actually, yeah. early on in an inn, which was better because it wasn't a proper hotel. It was actually like up a flight of stairs, sort
yeah.
of a B&B
like
feeling in a house.
Yeah.
And so that's another way to frame those early mm-hmm. days of travel. It's like, listen, the beauty of travel at that stage is just having a new environment, mm-hmm. like being able to look at a lake. It doesn't have right. to be like spectacular.
Right.
It's just a change of scenery, and that it just you reframe it. That's
yeah, and
all.
It's more about your experience than their experience.
Sure.
You're not getting
yes.
much out of it.
Yep. Yes.
And the fun thing too, you think I will be stuck in a hotel room from 6 o'clock on, but in Paris, the jet lag worked in our favor. So Haley was going to bed at like 10, 11, 12 at night. We were on an adult schedule. So we actually
so
like
smart.
Took her to the Louvre at 9 p.m. on a Friday night when it actually wasn't that crowded, and, you know, strapped her on our fronts in the Bjorn and just kind of puttered around. And we stayed up late and we had bottles of wine. I can't remember the last time I stuck around somewhere to have a bottle of wine.
And usually, she slept in the morning.
Yeah, she slept in the morning until like 10. So we'd have breakfast in the room. We wouldn't get out until noon or 1, but we didn't care. Because like you said, you're just, you want to change a scene. You want to do that place like a local. So we were the kind of travelers who would normally do 3 museums in a day.
Right.
And we were cracked out like that. And this time we maybe did one thing each day. Mm-hmm. And if that one thing was just walking around Ile Saint Louis, eating ice cream and window shopping, we still felt like we got
Absolutely.
Our day's worth, you know? Mm-hmm. It is a vacation.
And even being in the hotel and having room service and your kids having pancakes and you're sitting on the bed together, that's a different, you know, it's not what you would have normally done in your pre-kid life, but that becomes a little magical family experience that they remember, which is really sweet.
Yeah. And the whole monitor thing, so we brought an Amazon Cloud Cam, which is not a plug, I just swear. You use it on Wi-Fi and you download an app onto your phone. And you can go within a short distance and just watch your baby.
Mm-hmm.
And we did go downstairs in it was a hotel with like 16 rooms in the 6th arrondissement. And Le Comptoir, which is our favorite restaurant, was right downstairs. Mm-hmm. So it was New Year's Eve. We wanted to do something. We didn't want to be in bed at 9 p.m. So we put her to bed and then we snuck downstairs and we had a full 4-course meal.
Amazing. That's awesome.
And it took me like 2 drinks. I kept watching every like 30 minutes, and then Greg would take my phone away and say, like, you have to wait another 45 mm-hmm. before you look again. But there's a beep, you know, you're still monitoring them. Although, like I said, I did, like, on Facebook, on the comments section, I caught some shit for leaving her alone.
Oh, but nothing happened in the hotel.
Yeah.
You could
stays
run right upstairs
in Vegas,
if you
baby.
Need to.
I fully support that decision, Roman.
And it's very also, I mean, if you go, you know, to so many places like in Denmark or whatever, like people leave their strollers outside and you know, as American,
right?
You're
with
like,
the baby in it.
With the baby in it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And says the
Let's
New Yorker.
Be clear.
you know, and that there's a level of trust and, you know, you have greater admiration for those cultures that really like, you know, value parents and family.
Oh my gosh.
And,
or
you know,
like in Greece where we were when my youngest was 5, there were restaurants where she could just sort of wander around after she got bored after 10 minutes and people would play with her and talk to her and someone would pick her up and, you know, I think there are cultures that are just more kid friendly that way.
And that's kind of what I loved about this package too. And in researching it, we talked to so many people in our network and around the world who are all parents, right? I mean, we just blasted everyone we knew. And the lessons that were learned over the course of your child's life, you know, I have a 1-year-old, you have a 2-year-old, you have a college bound. Can I talk about this?
Sure, yes. My kids are not really kids anymore. Well, 2 of them aren't. They're 19, 17, and 12. And my oldest, you know, you get to a point where you actually put them on a plane to Europe by themselves, you know? But they feel confident and self-directed in doing it because they've been traveling their whole lives.
Well, you did an amazing trip. I mean, this on the other end of the spectrum, we've been talking about the littles for a while. You, with your 18-year-old, mm-hmm. you did a magical trip to Kyoto.
Yeah, well, it was great because it really dovetailed with my son Sam's interests. He had been taking a class on Eastern philosophy and was intrigued by Buddhism, and he's always been a very adventurous eater. And so we went to Tokyo for a couple of days, but then Kyoto for 4 days. And he'd never been to Japan, let alone Asia. And the thing that was so remarkable to him was that it was both recognizable in the way that, you know, modern and, you know, sneaker stores and all the manga and, you know, that he loves.
Anime, pop culture.
Anime, right. Yeah. But it's just so utterly different from the, you know, behavior of shopkeepers who put so much care and intention in the way they, like, wrap up a piece of mochi and hand it over, to just the history of the temples and the incredible heaviness of that experience to be in a place that's, like, 1,000 years old. Not only did we sort of tour some of the classic temples and shrines in Kyoto, but we had a couple of sessions through the hotel we were staying at, the Ritz-Carlton Kyoto. We had a pre-dawn tea ceremony with a third-generation tea master in the dark. It was pounding rain on the roof of this, like, 16th-century tea house. It was unbelievable and just mesmerizing. And then because he was interested in Buddhism, we did an early morning meditation session in a Zen temple with a robed, bald monk. And it was 45 minutes. And just like that he not only sort of, you know, managed to get through, but was actively interested and had kind of directed us to do that. It was just so moving for me as a parent to see that he was no longer being sort of dragged around to do these cultural things, but was, like, actively interested in them.
I think it's also a good sort of reminder that sometimes it's very hard and sometimes not economically, you know, possible to do separate trips with your kids. But there is nothing like traveling alone with your kid, and, you know, you have to deal with the ones who get left behind, you know, the other parent and the other sibling, and sometimes, like, their school breaks don't match up, and that's a reason to do it. But any excuse, even to do 2 days alone with your kid, if you have multiples, you know, it's an experience like no other. And if they get to direct that, and somehow it dovetails, to your point, with whatever their interests are. You know, there was one year a couple years ago, we went to Istanbul. It was the trip that I wanted to do and that my husband wanted to do, but it happened to coincide with my older son doing a study on Islam. So in school, so he was the one that was basically telling us about the architecture and you know, Ottoman Empire. He knew everything about it. And
how old was he at the time?
He would have been, maybe 12.
That's kind of spot on, right? Yeah. We were talking about what's the right age to do these ancient civ courses abroad, kind of. And you added an amazing story about a woman who took her kids out of school for 3 months, right? To go to Greece and Turkey, or no, Greece, Israel. Am I making that up?
Yeah, no, it's correct. Yes, Italy, Israel, Turkey, Greece. But inspired really by her kids' love for Rick Riordan, Lightning books.
Yeah.
My kids never got into them. But anyway, they were totally obsessed with ancient mythology, and it helped give her trip a through line so that there was something they were interested in that they already knew, they brought some knowledge to already. And, like, mythology, Greek mythology, like, it's so fun.
It's so accessible.
They also went to Norway in the Norse mythology.
Trolls and fjords
and
things.
Exactly. And, but just that she, like, to me, that was always my dream that I was too chicken to do, to really commit to, whether it's a year or it's a couple months, to just shape your life in such a way that you can actually do such an immersive trip like that. I think it's amazing.
It's so cool. Yeah. I also think that it's important to note that, like, our children are not all prodigies, that these are little pockets of passion that we are running with, and that they are equally excited about. You know, we went to Rome, and specifically around, a soccer game when my children were and continue to be obsessed with soccer. And we travel with a soccer ball.
I was
going to
say, always travel.
So on the other end of the spectrum.
Or if you can't carry a soccer ball, a tennis ball will do sometimes.
That's a good idea.
But I think that's what made, like, working on this package and the way we organized it was by age. And I think that's such an important takeaway from it, is riff on what the kids are interested in at that point, because otherwise, I mean, I assume it's way less fun to have a kid, like, kicking and screaming and, like, I don't want to go.
It doesn't work to force feed them museums and gardens if they're not going to.
Go ahead.
Oh, what I was going to say is it helps to have this sort of, like, laid out in front of you to say, okay, at 4 and 5, they're going to be interested in these things. And as they get older, like, this is when this moment hits. And this is when, like, Pilar, when you were talking about safari, you know, there's, like, that sweet spot of time. And that, to me, is so helpful to know this and to just be aware of it, that
Yeah, before too many years go by and you miss your, like with Safari, I took my younger one. That was one of the ones that we did alone. And you know, I sort of never heard the end of it from the other two members of my family. But he was at this point, he was 8 years old at the time and still is a huge animal lover, much more so than the other one. So I felt a little bit better about that. And the other kid was a self-proclaimed European city person.
Already?
That doesn't sound totally obnoxious. and also, you know, a kid who has a turntable and is obsessed with all things old. But anyway, you know, it was this magical sweet spot, to your point, you know, within, like, I would say, you know, 6 to like 12, you know, especially before they're totally obsessed with their friends and needing to text and, you know, on their devices full time. And you know, there's still that magical sort of window where they will engage that way. And then you get to sleep in the bed with them at night, which is so sweet.
Well, the way you described it, I think you said it was pre-braces. They still sleep with their stuffy, you know.
Yeah.
That's so vivid. Of course, they're going to be really into, like, everything from the beetle to the elephant.
You know? And no beetle.
Yeah.
Sweet smelling little sylph of a
How
child.
How long does that last?
Well, we're heavily in the BO.
Around 12. Yeah. Yeah. Pass the threshold.
But there's the thing that stuck with me, Alex, that you talked about was the, I think it was the France trip where you went to all the castles with your kids. And that
Talk
to
about
me
force
is,
feeding.
Yeah. That's like the ultimate, but they hated
well,
it.
This
right?
was like one segment of a 6 week trip. So I guess in their defense, they had already been dragged through a lot. But so we were in the Loire Valley, which I thought would be a perfect place to go together because it's full of castles, like wineries for me. But then I think I'd planned 3 castles in one day. It's historical places, like some of them are furnished, some have like armor in them. I thought that's great. The boys will love the armor, and some have moats you can boat around, and then some have gardens. Well, we hit, I think it wasn't even the third. I don't think we got to the third. We got to the second, and there was like an intervention. The kids just said enough. Stop it. We hate this. We hate this trip. We can't see another dusty old castle. That's what one of them, a dusty old castle. And I threw a fit. It was like, you know, a mutual meltdown. And so, you know, I was so angry with them because here I had like planned this whole thing and I'd quit my job actually in order to do this. And we got in the car and we drove on silence. And then we passed a like town fair. And there was a bouncy castle, literally a bouncy castle in this French town.
Like,
and they
castle.
Were like, stop the car. So we all get out. They get, you know, they go and they jump for half an hour in the bouncy castle and they couldn't have been happier. And I was like, okay, I get it. It's like one for me and one for you. And
that's
how
rule.
We proceeded with the rest of our trip, where I realized like it's not a winning strategy to just try to overdo it with them.
Yeah.
So we played a lot of mini golf.
Well, yeah, you need to.
But if you're playing mini golf in France, like, that's cool.
Right? Yeah.
It's better.
Is it better?
Actually,
it's got to be better.
It's actually, we took one of the first trips we did was Paris when the boys were 8 and 5. And there are so many beautiful playgrounds. Mm. So we would do, it was like that. Like, we sort of plotted our, you know, our walking route around beautiful playgrounds so that
the playgrounds
we could,
in Europe are
oh, Stockholm has some great ones too.
Oh,
apparently.
Stockholm is just made for children. Yeah. I mean, it just is a culture that is completely made for children.
All the little islands and even just reading about the amusement parks on the islands, like I wanted to go. It sounds amazing.
Yeah,
Swiss playgrounds are like little clean cities. They're amazing, you know? And, I mean, really incredible. So, I mean, you really could, to your point, Lauren, about you having to sort of give up the idea that you're going to have the trip that you used to have, you won't. But there will be other discoveries like that where you would never hang out in a playground. They're so beautifully engineered and kept and, you know, keep the kids busy.
And also in cities, you think, oh, well, cities are, you know, hard with kids. And the reality is there's so many little, especially a city like Paris, I mean, not to harp on that because there are many that are like this, but that, you know, you can have a crepe, you know, from a crepe stand. Mm-hmm. And then you go and you have a little macaron, you have a, you know, you can make it be little snacks and treats along the way that are edible and other, you know, I mean, they don't all have to be food, but, you know, a Ferris wheel here, a soccer, you know, it's a great way to make friends. Back to the soccer. It's like in any city, it's the universal language. You go to a park, you make a little friend, you kick the soccer ball around, then you can squeeze in another museum.
Yeah.
And that's the thing also. It's like, if you go to the Louvre, have a plan. Or if you go to any major museum, like, you know, plot 3. I mean, we always use context tours. They have, you know, specialist art historians. Sometimes they're young graduate students, so they're fun. And, you know, we get somebody to meet us so that they really sort of distill, whether it's the museum or within a certain walking range within a city, to kind of not overwhelm. And then they have these, like, you know, in Venice, we looked for the lion. The lion is sort of the symbol of Venice. So we would look, you know, in all of the the friezes or the wherever in the monuments, we would look up and find, you know, or the Medici balls or whatever it was in Florence. Little things to keep them engaged along the way, which is always really helpful.
Yeah, and even if you don't have a guide or a specialist in a city, just planning well enough ahead that you pre-buy, like, museum tickets, or, like, we got cut right to the front of the line to see the Sistine Chapel seal, you know, kids just, you cannot stand in a line with them.
No.
It's just,
and a line is anything more than 10 minutes and you're toast. I mean,
it's like you basically used half your credit with the line.
Right.
Like, that's the problem.
Yeah. You have to get them, like, two ice creams immediately after. I like the idea of doing tours around stuff they love. Like, the Harry Potter tour of London is something I want to do when Haley's 10 or 11. It's so easy. There's Muggle tours. You don't have to necessarily go, like, deep history. You can do pop culture references, right? And like you said, we were talking about Greece, and if they're reading the Odyssey, being able to call out points in the Odyssey or around the Peloponnese.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I do think, you know, we've talked about timing things to the right age, but we did, like, a civil rights oriented tour. I mean, it wasn't, like, hardcore or anything. Like, we were in Memphis to listen to the music, go to the Stax Records in Graceland, but we also went to the MLK Civil Rights Museum, which was amazing, and then drove to Nashville. And we, as part of that, might have been another trip, but went to Montgomery, Alabama, with incredible monuments to, like, the horrible history of slavery there. But it's just these teachable moments that don't feel like
you're cramming
pedagogy.
Broccoli.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
No, we talked about that a little bit more in this issue. And Birmingham has an incredible Civil Rights Museum, too, with, like, holographs and history of the Klan, and they have a Freedom Rider bus that you can sit in. Did you go there? Or
in Montgomery, there's you can go sit at the back of the bus, and, you know, it's experiential for kids and helps, like, bring these
How
important subjects to life.
How old were your kids when you did that?
That was maybe 3 years ago. So,
all,
you know, like,
went?
Teenagers to, like, all
the whole bus,
the whole brood. Mother Hubbard just kind of. Yeah, I think they were, like, early high school, middle school.
Yeah.
I also think the buddying up of, you know, culture plus something that's purely just play is a nice sort of, you know, a nice system. If you're going to do any European city in the summertime, it's pretty rough because it's, you know, especially the big cities where there's a lot of ground to cover. It is hot. Mm. It's crowded. You don't know why you're there when you're there. But there are certain things. If you're flying in and out of Rome, then you piggyback something that's by the water for a few days so that it sort of becomes the reward for something that's a little bit like, okay, we've earned our, you know, water time, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just a nice way to do it. And then, you know, road trips are nice in Europe, too, as a nice sort of way into slightly more adventurous, you know, beyond a kind of, you know, American or Caribbean or Hawaii or Mexico beach vacation to kind of do the homework and fun.
Yeah.
When would you start road tripping? We talked about whether there's, like, a too early age.
When they're really little, they sleep, which is
kind of great,
too.
I mean, we always
say. Until they don't.
You're in that stage
Oh, my God. And then they just want to run. Yeah. When do you guys start taking road
We
trips?
Just always road trip. Did, too.
Because
it was, in some ways, it's the easiest. Yeah. And I just remember, actually, you're reminding me when Henry was about two plus, and he, after a certain number of hours in the car, he would arch his back and say, "Hikey out! Hikey out!"
It's kind of where,
like,
we are.
Let's get out, you know?
Where he starts trying to escape from the harness, and you're like, oh, no.
Right. No, but that's the thing. I think the thing you have to be mindful of is not being so ambitious with the lengths, with the driving lengths. Like, you got to take a ton of breaks and really, like, stop for breakfast, stop for lunch. Mm-hmm. Like, don't power through, you know, or, you know, do if it's like we're going to power through until so that we get to bed at a reasonable hour, whatever it is. But just, you know, not to cram too much, but to really just slow it down.
Yeah.
You know,
we also got to know the backs of many gas stations, you know, rest stops where there's like a grassy hill and the to just like run up and down for 15 minutes.
Well, we talked about, like, how little kids are so excited for those moments. They don't care. They're like, yes, cool convenience store where all this candy, you know, I can have all of it. Or they're really into the Sonic milkshakes or the McDonald's stop on the highway or whatever. I mean, it doesn't take much to make them happy.
That's the thing, too, is like you got to, on vacation, you get to break your own rules. Like, you know, we had
permission to
gasp. We had McDonald's in Japan after like multiple days where it's like the food capital. And my kids loved it and they're great eaters, but they're like, Mom, can we do something super crazy that you would never let us do?
Super crazy.
You know? Because, you know, we're fairly healthy family, but, you know, and we push them to be good eaters and adventurous that way. And I was like, yeah, like we break and we have rituals too. Like every time we fly into LA, we stop at an In-N-Out because you can't get In-N-Out outside of California or the West Coast. And, you know, so those little things, and it's like if you can, I'm kind of slightly rules oriented. So, you know, if you can break your rules, then travel becomes that sort of, you know, that place where then they can get excited about those. Yeah.
Well, it's a way to get buy-in. Like in Italy, we had first we began with, you know, okay, unlimited gelato in a day, but then it turned into a contest of who can eat the most gelato in a day. And the truth is, like, they couldn't eat more than three or four tiny little, you know, the scoops are like a quarter the size of a scoop of Haagen-Dazs. And so to turn into a competition, like who can eat the most gelato in a day, was fun for everybody.
Well, what do you do when you have kids who refuse, you know, everyone does, who refuse to eat anything other than chicken fingers and fries? I mean, do you?
I actually think that travel, like, there's no choice in some places, you know. So there is, you'll always find something, whether it's bread and an egg or whatever it is. There's always something that you can find. And, you know, there are fries lots of places. So, like, fries become the sort of gateway that say, you know what, well, now try an oyster. You know, I'll give you fries if you try an oyster. And, you know, again, you know, I think that it's true. It's easier said than done. But actually, when you're there, kids start to redefine themselves because they also, it's bragging rights actually to actually try things on foreign soil. My kids are far more adventurous on foreign soil because they have to be than when they're at home. Then I start to sort of cater to them a little bit. And that's, you know, and it's a good reminder that you shouldn't. It's just sometimes easier than putting up the fight, you know.
Well, you guys are all so well traveled too. Were there trips in this package that inspired you that you were like, oh, I hadn't thought of that? The one for me was Bhutan.
Yeah, I was going to say anything that Sophie Roberts did.
Yeah, right.
She's just so adventurous with her kids. She takes them everywhere.
It's incredible. Yeah.
Have you been to Bhutan?
I haven't. Mm-mm.
And she took her son to Papua New Guinea. But actually, it was such a great story because she has been, this was her third trip to Papua New Guinea, if you can believe it. But she tailored this one to be kind of a little bit mellower. Like it can be fairly rough and edgy, and a couple of the trips that she did, like up the Sepik River, and you know, you're sleeping like, you know, like a barely enclosed tent. And this, she stayed along the eastern coastline, stayed in a couple of small eco lodges, but because it's safe there, her kid, who was maybe 10 or 11, had a bit of independence, could go sort of mingle in the local community, and had his own adventure and didn't have to sort of be under her watch. And just what a different place to experience.
Yeah, I think that just enough independence is
you
a key.
Put like some guardrails so that they can't get hurt, but you know.
But that they're free to explore a little bit. And that's not always, even in places that are sort of seemingly more safe, it's actually, you know, we had a similar, we were in Ponza a couple of summers ago, an island off of Lazio in the Med. And the boys went, you know, we stayed in a little hotel and we brought some food in. And we said, you guys go get a little pizza and whatever. And they like actually brought it. They went into town because there are very few cars. They're mostly scooters and bicycles. And it's a tiny little island. They walked down, the two of them. We gave them some money. They picked up, and in some ways, being on in a foreign country, that's easier to do than here, than in the States.
And were their smiles so big when they got back? Were they just like, we have
pizza?
Well,
that's the thing. They're proud of themselves when they do stuff like that, you know? And you don't even have to, it doesn't even have to be so exotic to get that, you know, to get that feeling. The other story that it is not, maybe not, I think it's not in this package, is she took her son to Mongolia, didn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. which is pretty adventurous.
And
pretty,
then
I'll say.
Kind of.
Yeah, it's pretty adventurous. But I think also, like Becca's piece in mm-hmm. this package about the Orcas yeah. Islands, and just going to a place where she says, like, it never changes. You know, 20 years they've been going, and it's still exactly the same. And I think there's something really nice about mm-hmm. the return trip, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and incorporating some kind of tradition. Or like, we're going to go here every year. We're going to have the same experience, and it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, you create nostalgia. And
yeah, because I think
it's
those
powerful.
Are...
I mean, it's the happiest memories, even if it's just like Disney World every year, right? Which is something my family did. We road tripped a lot, but I didn't get on a plane until I was 16, I
wow.
think. Yeah. And, but that, I mean, I don't have one bad memory of any of those trips.
Right.
Maybe when we got a little older and we got fussier, but we were teenagers, right?
And that's, I think, what we did in this package, like doing the trip and then doing like a more advanced, like the reach trip, which is nice because you want to have the option of like, okay, this is what I can handle. Maybe I can push it a little bit and handle something a little more far flung or, you know, a little bit that feels a little bit beyond mm-hmm, my reach right. at this mm-hmm. point.
Well, where do you think you're going to go, LDC?
With Charlie mm-hmm. soon? I don't know. At this point, I need a vacation with just my husband.
Yeah.
Also really valid.
Also.
Right. And a date night on those trips, too, if you can.
Yeah. You know, I just, the thing about traveling with him now is I feel like he's at this point where he's sort of on the cusp of, like, knowing so much more than, like, knowing and remembering. And, mm-hmm. like, next year we can go on a trip and he'll retain some of it and actually know what he's experiencing, mm-hmm. I think. And that to me is when the real fun starts. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't necessarily need to like take him to a beach and just like chill out there. I don't really feel the need for a trip like that. I want, and this goes back to the reason why we wanted to have kids was to like have these experiences with them and have them be a participant in it. Mm-hmm. And so to me, like for our package, like I look at the trips at like 4, 5, 6, and it's like that to me is when the real fun starts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, I think, you know, when they're a little bit younger, a lot of people do just need that sort of physical break.
Yeah.
And you go to a place where they can run freely and splash around in the water. And, you know, when they're really little and you're watching them like a hawk in the mm-hmm. water, then that's a new, different form of stress. But
yeah.
if you go to a place where they're, you know, maybe you're not the only set of eyes.
Right.
Or you can, you know, they can participate in some activity and you can have like a minute to read
yeah.
a book and then you are with them again. You know, I'm not in favor of the like park them at a kids club all day.
Sure.
I am.
Debate.
Yeah, totally. I actually think it depends. Like sometimes you need that, but I think it's got to be a mix, you
yeah.
know?
I wouldn't do it for an entire trip, but it could yeah. be great for half a day.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
my God.
Exactly.
Yeah,
half a day.
Yeah.
For sure. And that's, I think, the point of so many of those. Like there's, you know, you give yourself the out so that
yeah.
you do get to have, you can dip in and out of it. It's not, I mean, there are some people who will, they need that break and they need it for all day and that's
mm-hmm.
fine and no judgment there because,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe the next day they don't, you know, avail themselves and then they're
yeah.
fully present. And I think that's equally,
right.
you know, important that
I think,
you
and just in just one in defense of kids clubs.
when
I think
they're
many
good,
of
they're
them,
great.
When they're good, right, because we think of them as just being like, you know, the places where kids are thrown in and locked in a room all day. But so many of them now have like their nature centers and
oh,
they
yeah,
take that,
yeah.
you know,
they're great.
We were, my kids, or my youngest one did one in Wailea in Four Seasons in Hawaii, and they would take them like to then like look at turtle eggs and all these things that I wouldn't have the patience or know how to do. So
yeah.
they're getting a whole experience. It's like quasi-educational, but
mm-hmm.
also fun and outdoorsy, and you're drinking a Mai Tai.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
well,
totally.
I think it depends on what you're craving too. You know, like right now you're craving some downtime, like
yeah.
the chance to sleep in, the chance to have a drink.
Yeah.
We're all working moms. Like we might just crave time with our kid.
Yeah.
Like a week straight where you get to hang out with your whole family unit.
Yeah.
Like that's a special thing now. So find a trip that fits what you need at
well,
that time.
Well, and also you're going to be a different person on every trip. So some days you might be the mom who is like, wow, my kid is totally engaged in the kids club. And then the other trip is going to be, this is going to be all about this kid and we're never going to be apart. And
mm-hmm.
and those are, you can be the same person and have those different modes. And
yeah.
I think that's the thing is like permission for all of those modes.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what you're state is.
So if you're listening, I hope you are, let us know what you think. Thank you, guys. This was really, really fun, and I had a great time putting this together and learning a lot from the moms who've been doing this a little bit longer than I have. But seriously, let us know. We are on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can tweet at us, Facebook. We also have a really great Women Who Travel podcast and a Facebook group attached to that. So please, if you are a woman who loves to travel, listen and sign up. We're going to go around real quick, and please just tell me where people can find you on social. Lauren.
Instagram at El DiCarlo.
Pilar. Instagram, Pilar_Guzman.
Instagram and Twitter at WordMover.
That's Alex Postman, and I'm at Laura_Redman on Instagram. Thanks, and have a good week.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.